it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hello and welcome to the Wisden World Cup Daily Podcast. England's hopes of retaining the World Cup are hanging by a thread. Afghanistan played England off the park in Delhi. They raced off to a flyer thanks to Rahmanullah Gurbaz's top order blitz and did well to recover after a mid-inning slump to get up to 284. From the moment that Fazal Haq Farooqi got Johnny Bairstow at the start of the second over of the England innings, England were always behind in the run chase, really, despite Harry Brooks' excellent 66. In the end, Afghanistan won by 69 runs, their first ever victory over England in any format, just their second ever World Cup win. I'm Yaz Rana, and with me today is Mark Butcher and Joe Harmon. Butch, well, at least we got our first upset of the tournament. Afghanistan did just outplay England in all departments, really.
The opening partnership, 114. It sort of put us on the back foot and rather quashed any hopes that there were that Chris Wokes' first two games of bad form were just a blip as he was easing his way into the tournament. He got absolutely slaughtered. Topley was good again, as you would expect him to be with the new ball. And again, when the change bowlers came on, or where Sam Curran in particular comes on as sort of like middle over bowler, again, the floodgates open. Having said all of that, you know, England's spinners in Rashid and Liam Livingstone bowled really well to drag England back into it. And a more ruthless side, or a side with a bit more of a cutting edge with the ball, might well have would seen them off for 250. But in the end, Afghanistan get to 280. You get that many on the board and the pitch is offering a bit of help to your spinners. And that gives them a huge opportunity to come in and do exactly what they did, which is. You know, the seamers bowled okay. They kind of kept a lid on things. England weren't able to get off to a flyer. And then the spinners came in. Well, I think in the end were 8 for 104 in 25 and a half overs for the three spin bowlers. And England were miles and miles off the pace. I guess the most frustrating thing about it is that England kind of have got, which we've always imagined that they would do, which is try to bat as deep as possible. But at what expense? The expense of having a bowling attack that is not capable of kind of doing what's required, even to a batting side like Afghanistan, in order to give yourself a chance on surfaces that are not just flat pitches that you can go out there and bully the ball around on. And so a massive, massive problem for England going forward. I mean, South Africa, that game on Saturday becomes huge. I mean, England could be out of the tournament through six games, which, you know, nobody would have said that was likely at the beginning. But the more you've watched, the more you think, well, yeah, why not?
Yeah. We'll return to how England pick a side, especially if Ben Stokes is available, because we've all had a go and it's not easy. Joe, we know that Afghanistan have a really good bowling attack, but you rarely get to see them defend a substantial total. They were utterly brilliant, and you know, it's an amazing story as well. Jonathan Trott at the helm, Afghanistan were winless in 2019, now victors over the 2019 world champions. They were just brilliant today, not just Rahmanullah, not just the spinners, but Ikram, the new keeper who come in, has barely played ODI cricket for the last 4 years. It's a really special story. As much as we'll talk about England, the Afghanistan story globally is very special.
Absolutely, and it was that opening pair that we picked out ahead of the tournament that thought maybe gave them a sniff that actually a couple of scalps would be possible. I don't know if I thought England would be one of them. I think that's obviously a reflection of England's poor play, but absolutely you've got to congratulate Afghanistan on a brilliant performance. Gurbaz was incredible. We've seen him show glimpses of that in the IPL, destroyed Rashid Khan during this year's IPL, and England really didn't have any answer to him. I mean, the fact that Afghanistan have won by the margin they have, and their captain ran out their player who was absolutely flying, this could have been even more of a battering. I mean, that was some absolutely abysmal cricket right there. Never a run. Actually quite a poor throw from David Williams, yeah. Still ran out by a distance. And from that point on, it felt like for the rest of that innings, up until about kind of maybe 43, 44 overs, it felt like England were kind of cruising towards having to chase something that was very within reach. And then actually halfway through, you're like, I was listening to TMS at that point, and there seemed to be a thought that it was just how long it would take England to chase those runs down, as though 280 odd isn't a lot of runs. I mean, the run rate might not be that high, but that's a lot of runs to score against a very good Afghan attack. And England never looked like they were remotely in it. I mean, it's the balance of the side is clearly an issue, but actually it's individual performances as much as anything else. That they just weren't at the races at all. And the fact that, you know, you can't just put this down as a one-off because they were similarly bad against New Zealand. And they've got real, real problems here. You know, even if they do somehow manage to sneak through to the semi-finals, they don't look like a side that can challenge India. New Zealand have already wiped the floor with them and look great. South Africa are showing much more conviction in their play than England. Suddenly England look like kind of also runs, which is, if today felt like a real throwback of a performance, you know, that kind of being stuck on the crease, tentatively probably forward against the spinners, seemingly having no strategy to cope with it. It felt like 2015 all over again.
Yeah. Afghanistan hit 8 sixes. England only hit 1. After the New Zealand defeat, Morgan talked about England needed to go harder. What did you make of England's approach with the bat?
That's a difficult one. I mean, you know, they lost Johnny Bairstow in the second over to a really marginal call. Live, actually, it looked dead, didn't it? But obviously, with the... when you looked at the replay and the with the line in and whatever, it only just clipped leg stump. Hence, Johnny was apoplectic as he walked off that it had been given out on field. And then from then on, I mean, they were still up. They were still in front of the rate. You know, once they'd gone past 100, 3 down started to look like a bit of a problem. I'm not entirely sure that the approach is necessarily the issue. I think that they don't have. They don't have the same confidence in themselves, which I think is borne out in the way that they bowl. You know, there isn't that sort of confidence that somebody is going to step up and do something special to arrest the initiative away. Once the opposition seem to have got them on the back foot, it doesn't look as though there is any way that they can stop it. You know, Harry Brook was sort of starved of strike for a long period of time. You got Liam Livingstone coming in behind him. They still had plenty of players who would have that absolute conviction because it's the only way they know how to play. So I'm not entirely. I'm very reticent to sort of blame it on a lack of intent from England. I think what I think there is been a little bit of hubris in terms of the type of cricket you might need to play on these types of surfaces. You know. The World Cup in 2019 was won in a manner that was not necessarily in a way that England had gone into that tournament playing. I also think that England are not a very good chasing team. I mean, I don't know what they think of themselves as in terms of their prowess at run chases. But I looked into it on the way up, and prior to this game, it was 22 games they've chased in since the 2019 World Cup. Only 11 of them have been successful. They've lost 8, and 3 of them were no results. So that percentage goes another one the wrong way after today. And again, you sort of, you look back at the toss and think to yourself, well, you know, the conditions look pretty damn good for batting if you ask me first up. And the only way that I can see Afghanistan beating one of the big teams is if they get a par score or just above, and then their spinners do what they did to us today. And so that decision in itself just felt like it was made, I don't know, made without sort of due care and attention to the opposition that you're playing against. I feel like there's a bit of complacency. And you could say that in terms of the way that England built up to the tournament. Lots of players not playing, guys, you know, them deciding not to play anybody in the Ireland series or whatever it might be. People not playing 50 over cricket at all. I mean, that's our system at the moment. It just feels a little bit as though all we need to do is kind of turn up, stick our chests out with the same attitude as we had under Owen Morgan, and everything else will fall into place. Well, it's not as quite as simple as that.
It'd be very interesting to know how fit Ben Stokes was today, because all the talk was that he's basically ready to play. Have they decided, well, this is Afghanistan, we don't want to risk anything, we'll hold him back for South Africa? Because he would have, we're talking about England struggling with chases. Ben Stokes is the best cricketer we've got in terms of chasing down a total. He would have been a massive asset today. And, you know, we'll never know the answer to that question. But But I hope they picked their best side possible and weren't thinking about the challenges ahead.
We got a lot of questions in basically saying, is this a result of England not having a domestic 50 over competition? And obviously that's going to play a role in the development of young players, but Virat Kohli only played 17 domestic list day games before he ended up playing for India, and he's basically not played one for 10 years. It's quite similar for other countries as well. Babar Azam doesn't exactly play for Karachi that often either. But what I think is interesting, and you alluded to it there, is the players who are actually in this team and in this squad, a lot of them, other than Adil Rashid, Moeen Ali, who's not in the team anymore, I guess, they haven't actually played that much ODI cricket in the last 4 years. And you say their record chasing isn't very good. They actually haven't chased it since March. Every ODI since March, England have batted first. And then you have players who haven't played ODI cricket for about a year anyway. So, so players like Root and Beto have actually not chased in ODI cricket since July 2022.
The lack of a 50-over competition is, whilst not being a red herring, is perhaps not applicable to the players in this World Cup, because most of them wouldn't have played a great deal of it anyway. However, it goes back to the idea, the hubris around sort of, you know, how important your preparation is for a tournament such as this. And, you know, You said it yourself, the wicketkeeper has only just been drafted in the side for Afghanistan. He doesn't play any 50-over cricket at all, and he, you know, put in a terrific performance. So whilst it's not, that's not, that isn't the reason for it. The reason that you could that you can look into at the moment is that the bowling attack looks toothless. You know, the teams that have looked fantastic, they've either batted teams, as South Africa have done, they've battered teams with the bat. Which England did, funnily enough, in their second match against Bangladesh. That was a terrific batting performance there. So, you know, form-wise, there are enough players who are good enough. There are certainly enough players in the 11 they had out there today to chase down 280. My issue is that on surfaces that are not plonk your foot wherever you like and smash it out of the park, your bowlers need to do a better job than you know, Wokes and Curran have gone for 87 off 8. Without taking a wicket today.
Well, Curran's gone over eight across the whole tournament now.
Yeah, and look, and this is not, you know, this is not us jumping on his back after today. All of us said prior to, certainly I did before the tournament started, that I really don't like him as a middle overs bowler in 50 over cricket. I don't see it as a role that he's actually equipped to be able to do. And at the moment, England have got their stall set out on him doing that job. You know, one thing that they couldn't have perhaps have flagged up before the whole thing started was Chris Wokes having the nightmare that he is having. Because that's a massive, massive issue for them.
That's a real conundrum now, isn't it? I mean, Sam Curran, I'd be very surprised if he plays against South Africa. I suspect we won't see him again in the tournament. It felt like that kind of performance today when you've got other options who can do similar things and they might change the balance.
Well,
of the side.
I mean, but do similar things. I mean, this is the other side of it is that, again, you look at England's success built around and up to the 2019 World Cup was in having two guys throughout the middle or one guy and a top quality spin bowler through the middle, being able to take wickets as well as keep runs down. Now, Sam Curran is not that bowler in 50-over cricket. He isn't in 20-over cricket when guys have got to hit sixes and he's kind of second-guessing what they're trying to do. But in just normal play where a batter is generally just standing there and kind of like, and it's your job to try and get him out, otherwise he will score runs in a low-risk fashion. He is not that guy. Mm. And that, for me, was as plain as the enormous nose on my face as it has been to at any time. I mean, it's even more obvious now. And so that for me, that's a problem. And any time you find yourself having to stretch yourselves in terms of the runs required to be scored on a particular surface, I think Afghanistan ended up being 25 to 30 runs over par, and the team you're facing, their speciality is bowling on slowish surfaces with a little bit of spin either way. You've got big problems. You know, so planning wise, not particularly good. 11 wise, again, the Wokes thing. We all, I think, said after the last game that the chances are they'd give him another game and that he will find his form because he's a class act. Well, that hasn't happened, so that's a massive issue. But the current one for me just baffles me.
Do you think they can give Wokes one more? Because now the South Africa game is so big, you can look at it either way. You can say, well, that's when you give your experienced guy one more chance. Or do you say, well, this is it. So actually you throw in, Atkinson
It's a massive problem because if you leave... So I've been trying to... Stokes comes.
We've all been sitting there scribbling these sides and saying it doesn't work.
We're going to do this now. Stokes comes into the side, right? And it's almost easier to make those bowling changes if Stokes isn't available. because the batting stays exactly as it is. I think if you bring Stokes in, you don't drop a batter for him. That's the problem. So one of Curran and Wokes has gone already. And then you've got the issue of, well, whichever bowler you leave behind probably shouldn't be in there on the strength of their bowling anyway. So you do then make another change, which leaves you with only four specialist bowlers plus Livingston plus Root. And again, in certain conditions, you would say that doesn't look terrible. But being that you're making the changes from a position of weakness rather than a position of strength makes it really, really tough. Whichever call that they go with at the moment, you could pick holes in every single one of them, every single one. And that is not a scenario that World Cup winning teams should find themselves in.
What would you do for the South Africa game in terms of changes to 11, assuming that Stokes is fit? So basically, I mean, Rook played brilliantly today. How do you keep him the side? And if so, how do you keep him the side? And then also, what are you doing with Curran and Wokes?
Yeah, I'd bring Stokes in for Curran. You have an issue with the bowlers. You're basically calling Livingston your fifth bowler. And if it goes wrong for one of the five, you're looking for overs from Root. It's far from ideal, but I think that's the situation they find themselves in. Then it's, does Wokes stay in the side? Or for me, do you bring in Atkinson? I don't think I'd bring in Willie. I think that's kind of... That feels like a bit like more of the same in terms of what we've seen from Curran. It's a real tough one on Wokes or Atkinson. I would be tempted to give Wokes one more game just because this is so out of character for him to have performed in the way that he has in the World Cup. Unless he's carrying a niggle and that's affecting his bowling. I don't know. Butch, do you notice anything?
Nothing at all.
That doesn't look like what's going wrong. I mean,
cannot find a length to save his backside at the moment.
And you just think how brilliantly he was bowling, like, completely different format, completely different circumstances. But the guy we saw bowling at the Oval here, it didn't look like he could ever bowl a bad ball.
But not just in the Ashes, it was in the ODIs as well. Yeah. He was really good in the ODI here.
I suppose the thing that you turn around and say, well, it's Wokes away from home again, isn't it? Mm. Although that's never been such a stark issue with white ball as it has been with red. With red, you just go, well, that's the
literally
reason.
Different ball.
Yes, that's the reason. With white, that's not been the case. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I've kind of written my 11 down here, and again, you can pick holes in it all over the place. But I've gone for Wokes and Curran both missing out. I've gone for England having to rely very, very much on the top seven, which is Livingston at seven. And that, you know, with Stokes, Butler and Brook batting wherever the situation dictates, and your bowlers as Topley, Wood, Rashid and Atkinson.
So Rashid,
I'd give Atkinson the new ball. Atkinson can bowl new ball middle and end, as far as I'm concerned, despite the fact that he's incredibly inexperienced, right? So that's a complete given. But at least there's a bit of something on the ball. You can get a decent Yorker in. He's quick. He can ruffle people and bowl that back of a length stuff that Curran can't do when it's flat, etc. Now that could go terribly wrong, but England batting as deep as they did today didn't help them.
And so
I'd rather go for a scenario whereby you might be able to bowl a team out for something that is around par or just above, rather than shipping far more runs than par and then leaving yourself in a situation where you can't chase it down anyway, no matter how deep you bat. So, I mean, like I said, it's not perfect, but that's the scenario that England find themselves in, with both of their all-rounders in Wokes and Curran just being so far off the pace with the ball.
Yeah, and also England, it feels like they simultaneously bat deep at the moment, but also not. Sam Curran at seven feels a position too high. So it feels like they're not really covering either discipline as much as they could do. I think the Atkinson thing is really interesting because when he got picked in the squad, having basically not played professional 50 over cricket, I thought, because it was based on how he did in the 100, as very good with the new ball and very good at death, that would be how they'd use him in the ODI team. But in the New Zealand ODI, he basically got used as just a middle overs guy. So he has literally not done the job. I sort of agree. I'd probably play Atkinson just because that's three games is a lot to you know, it's a significant percentage of your World Cup campaign that has not gone right for Wokes. But then Atkinson's a guy who's literally never done the job.
Well, his 50 over career, his whole day career amounts to 33 overs. And he's the player
we're
saying he might be the person to turn around England's World Cup campaign. Well, and that's where we are. And it's not crazy, but it is.
That's exactly where we are. I mean, I imagine that what will probably happen is that Stokes will come in, that Curran will miss out for Stokes, and the Wokes will play again. And that's what I think will happen. And you know, he's a big boy. He's been around for long enough. He will just have to turn it around if that is the case. And, you know, make everybody eat their words, which is absolutely fine. We'll all be more than happy for him to have a great day out. Mm. But at the moment, you look at it and just think, oh, my God, you know, coming up against South Africa at the moment, look like they're scoring runs for fun.
Yeah.
The game could be over before the power play's done if England end up bowling first.
Well, that's it. Woke's taking the new ball against De Kock, who's scored back-to-back centuries to start the tournament with Van der Dussen, Markram, Klaassen to come. I mean, that is almost the worst possible opposition for England to face.
But then I suppose the crumb of comfort is that it's South Africa and they could look like the best team in the tournament and then suddenly stink the place out. Yeah. Who knows? They usually leave it a little bit later. Might be a bit too soon.
Yeah. Anyway, that's it for part one. In part two, we'll talk more about the England defeat and answer some of your questions. Before the tournament started, we talked about this a little bit, but I don't think we talked about it enough. The decision to pick six seamers in a squad for a World Cup in India. Joe, I think it's one of those things that makes sense in theory, but we're three games in and it doesn't look like two of those seamers, David Willey and Gus Atkinson, have come that close to playing any of the three games. And they don't have the flexibility to pick an extra spinner if conditions dictate that's probably the better thing to do. And we saw how effective, not just a specialist Afghanistan spinners in Adil Rashid, but Liam Livingstone, his 10 overs, 1 for 33. England didn't have the option to bowl more and more spin. I guess they had Joe Root, but they don't have the option in the squad to have a proper frontline spinner to help Rashid.
No, I mean, you could argue they don't necessarily have the option in the country, really. I mean, Liam Dawson's a very good white ball bowler. He's a very good bowler, full stop. But I don't think anyone would say England's World Cup campaign is going to hinge on whether Liam Dawson was in the squad or not.
No, I did look at it and just think that was it's either a spare bat or it's another spin bowling all rounder that you might want in there. And that six fast bowlers. I mean, see, again, if you're picking six fast bowlers and the reason given for doing so is that it's, you know, there's a lot of travel and there's a lot of games in a short period of time. Well, there's a good, how many days are we away from the South Africa game now? Another six days. Yeah. Basically, they were saying that we've got a load of blokes whose fitness we can't trust on the plane.
Well, that's the issue. They want to give Mark Wood chances to rest, don't they?
So you know, that in itself is kind of picking on the back foot. It's not picking for the reason that's not picking about the conditions that you're going to encounter. That's picking to try and cover, put a sticking plaster on something that you see as being a potential problem. And again, I looked at that when the squad first came out and just thought, well, they're missing. That Dawson was the guy that I thought, and others, you know, Owen Morgan might have said, well, I might have taken another batter. Jason Roy might have made it on the flight after all, you know, and left one of the fast bowlers at home. But it was certainly an area that raised an eyebrow. But you're right, it's not. I don't think it's going to be something that will make or break England in the tournament, because there are enough high quality players there if they get it right, that it shouldn't be an issue. But it does feel as though you've got one, you've basically got 14 on the plane to pick from. And if both of your, as I said, both of your sort of bowling all-rounders are stinking the place out with the ball, then you've got a massive problem.
We've got a question from Niall who says, not a question, but can you give me some hope that England can qualify? Obviously, we've been a bit downbeat for the last 20 or so minutes.
Well, gee.
But I guess... one of Pakistan, England and Australia probably has to qualify for the semi-finals, and I think none of them look that good at the moment. I don't think Sri Lanka, Bangladesh and Afghanistan can muster enough wins to get them there. So one of those three got to get there. But as you said, probably don't have a great chance of actually doing anything once they get to the semi-finals.
Well, you never know. You never know. But I think the assumption was that you couldn't afford to lose more than three games if you're going to get through to semi-finals. But if Australia, Pakistan and England are looking weaker than expected and actually teams beat each other more than anticipated, then maybe you can sneak through with five wins.
Mm.
I mean, I still, you're saying you don't think an outsider, a Sri Lanka or a Bangladesh can sneak in there?
I don't think so, no. Sri Lanka have already lost two games. Bangladesh obviously lost against England, lost against New Zealand. So, and Afghanistan, again, I just think their batting is not strong enough to get even five wins, I think. I think actually one of the passages of playing this game that I thought England were really poor in was They, Afghanistan get off that brilliant start. England spinners sort of control the middle overs. And it's actually towards the end when Afghanistan don't have a particularly deep batting lineup. That was when Afghanistan got to that above par score or around about par score.
Mujeeb and Ali Khil.
And I don't think that's something that Afghanistan are going to do that often. Maybe I'm wrong. But
a better side. And anyone can get off to a flight. Not anyone, but you can go around the park in the power play. Fine. But having done what England did so well, as you said, with the spinners through the middle, they shouldn't have got more than 250, 260 tops. They really shouldn't. You know, that's not a deep batting lineup in the manner that we talk about our team about England. And so, no, you're absolutely right. That was again, you sort of at the top and at the tail, which are the two key elements of a 50-over cricket. England were very, very bad.
You'd say, I mean, this is just a small thing, but Mark Wood ends up bowling 9 overs. That's probably a bit of mismanagement from Butler there. I mean, I can't think why he wouldn't bowl his full 10 there, especially when Sam Curran comes back into the tack, having gone at 12s, 13s in his first two. So that's just a small thing. But, you know, that cost them maybe 10 runs, which wasn't going to change the result of the game today. But, yeah, you could say Butler's not had the greatest day captaincy wise either. But then it is tricky if you're captain and your bowlers aren't bowling anywhere near as well as they should do, which he had 2 of his 5 nowhere near.
Obviously today wasn't good, but when England got to the 2019 World Cup, they were the standout side in the world, and whatever you think of England, you probably agree that they're somewhere between 3, 4, 5 at the moment. Do you think there's an element of that the ODI game has actually gone up to another level and teams have actually seen what England have done and they're sort of just back in the pack almost? Like India at the moment, Rohit's playing in a way that he didn't used to play. South Africa are aiming for scores that no one other than England really used to aim for. Do you think there's an element of that
England
as well?
England are victims of their own success.
Potentially.
No, possibly. But I mean, you know, that's the way it goes, isn't it? The game evolves and people take bits from the most successful sides and apply them to their own game. I think that the area... Again, I don't see that England have changed massively in terms of their outlook to that. I do think that their bowling is much, much weaker than it was. I mean, and that's, you know, you only know what a sort of a par, a decent score is if you bowl very well. Do you know what I mean? You bowl really well when a team gets to 280. You think, well, we're chasing that down, no problem. It's probably a 360 pitch, but you bowl unbelievably badly and the team gets 280. You've got no idea, you know, what a decent score was on that pitch. You know, and potentially it was 250 was tops. You know, that's you've got a massive issue if bowling wise you cannot keep control of the game for any significant length of time. And that's, you know, that's as much to do with the personnel available as it is anything else.
If you look at Morgan had Archer, who was reliably brilliant, new ball and at the death, and also you could throw him a couple of overs in the middle. And Liam Plunkett did.
And the Plunk.
And it did an incredible role for England. They've not replaced him in that role
because Mark Wood, his role is always, you can almost put Mark Wood down for going for 50 off his 10, and he might pick up 3 wickets, he might not pick up any, but you kind of know that that's going to be his figures. He doesn't ever bowl you 10 overs 1 for 33, does he? He's going to go around the park because he gets, you know, sliced over third man for 6 or whatever, but he's impactful. Somebody like Plunkett, however, was miserly and took wickets for you in the middle, which is one heck of a combination, and they've never found anybody to replace him.
I think Brydon Carst, I'm not saying he's the answer, no, but actually did sort of do that job pretty well against some
pretty
good
sides. And they were obviously
interested,
weren't they? Because they parachuted him into the ODI squad after doing well in the T20s. Yeah. So they definitely wanted to have a look.
And again, you know, England, when you go back to the six seamers that England picked, they picked 3 left-arm swing bowlers who'd all like to use the new ball.
Yeah, that butcher's face, especially the one for the YouTube audience.
Just, you know, they all do the same thing with varying degrees of success, and only one of them is going to get to do it. So why have you got 3 of them?
Well, there's still more than a month of the World Cup to go. Next up tomorrow, Joe, Australia, Sri Lanka. On paper, that could be a great game.
Yeah, I quite fancy Sri Lanka here. I do. I think Sri Lanka have been... I mean, the problem obviously is their bowling attack. Mm. They're missing their best spinner and they're missing their best seamer. So that's a tough starting point. But Australia's batting has lacked the dynamism so far to capitalise that. And Sri Lanka's batting has actually gone really nicely. So if Sri Lanka could just have a kind of a par performance with the ball, keep Australia within sight, then we might have a good game on our hands.
Well,
we got the shot the tournament wanted, but just not necessarily the way we wanted it.
Yeah. Anyway, that is everything for today's show. As I said, still a month of dailies still to come, so bear with us. Cheers, Joe. Cheers, Butch. We'll be back tomorrow.
Sports Social Podcast Network.